Let's begin. There is the topic and style of this shiur. So, like many of my shiur, I try to incorporate as many different styles as possible. So, what you might get on one week or a partial of another week might not be the same in the same shiur or even the next week, because I like to focus more on the idea, more on the concept, rather than the style, whether it's halacha, whether it's machshava, philosophy, whatever it is. But I thought the approach, I guess the mission statement for our shiur. We should have a shiur mission statement. It's developed by a sefer called the B'nai Machshava Tova. B'nai Machshava Tova is it's a not often learned sefer. And it's written by Rav Klonimus Kalman Shapira of Piazetzna. He was killed at the Warsaw Ghetto, killed, you know, by the Nazis. And before he died, he put away several of his books and he buried them. And after the war, when the Americans came in, they dug up and they found the Sfarim. And there was a note that said, whoever finds this, by the time you find it, there may be no more Jews left in the world. But there will be Jews left in Israel. I guarantee you that. Bring them my books for printing, and I will see to it that you have a space in the world to come. And the American soldier found these books, and one of those great books, if you can get a hand on one of the English books they have over of Klonimus Kalman Shapira, they have the book The Holy Fire, or for children, A Student's Obligation, How to Raise Children. He's years ahead of his time. It's unbelievable. And he wrote this sefer called B'nai Machshava Tova, and the concept was of creating a group that meets together for the purpose of growing, for the purpose of inspiring each other, you know, to live better, to do better, inspiring with words, inspiring with actions, and to create a group that really looks to inspire and guide each other to progress gradually as every week goes on, as every shiur goes on. And that was the plan in his book, B'nai Machshava Tova. So hopefully on some level we can create this sort of similar environment that he was referring to, this environment of B'nai Machshava Tova, of children with good thought, of good intentions of growing, using Torah for its primary purpose, which is to be better, to find better for ourselves in our lives. And that goes for myself and to everybody here. Each one of us can always live better. And that certainly is a message of Elul, and that I think is a mission statement for this shiur going forward. Today's talk is definitely going to be Elul focused, but the specific nature of the talk is plugging in. Elul is a time where we attempt or reattempt to connect to God. We attempt to connect to Hashem and begin that relationship new each and every year. We restart the cycle each year to start again. This year is going to be a year we're going to try to do this better. We're going to try to do that better. We try a little something different each year. And this whole question of plugging in, of connecting, of how to connect to Hashem, of how to connect to God. And, you know, we could start by saying, well, maybe, you know, it's made a little difficult because it's not our fault. Maybe God doesn't connect to us by virtue of the fact that Hashem is invisible, right? There's no God there. There's nothing on the other end. It's easy to connect to someone in the store that you talk to every day when you buy your coffee. I connect to them. I talk with them. But Hashem is not there. Hashem is not visible. So how do I connect with a being that is not visible? So there's a fallacy in that argument. And the fallacy is as follows. Let's say we're at a table, right? This is a mashal of the Maharal. We're at a table and we just finished the soup course, right? Or we just finished the pasta. Now we have an empty bowl in front of us. There's no need to testify to the fact that there was pasta there, that there was soup in that bowl. From the very fact that the bowl is there, even though it's sitting there empty, I understand that that was a soup bowl. I understand that that was soup. Kal v'chomer, how much more so? We live in a world that's God's world. We breathe air, we walk on the streets, we're alive, we're able to, thank God, have our daily functions, most of us. We're able to live life on a basic level. That living testifies to the fact that there is a God right in front of us at all times, that there is Hashem in our lives every step we take. As the Balatanya puts it, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, if that were to stop for a moment, breathing would stop. All sorts of life would revert. So the fact that we don't see is not a barrier to our relationship. We relate to things all the time that we don't see. You don't see love to define love. You have actions which indicate that love is there, but you can't point and say that's love. What you're pointing to is the actions that say, oh, those are acts of love. But love itself, you can't point to love, it's intangible. So because something is intangible, it does not mean that we can't create a relationship with it. We can't create a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Chas V'Shalom. So the way I would phrase this problem, this philosophical dilemma, It's not a problem from Hashem's vantage point. It's mitzidenu. It's from our own vantage point. It's from our own perception. Right? In life, there's mitzido and mitzidenu. This split was defined by Rav Chaim Volozhin, the student of the Vilna Gaon. The example he gives is as follows, right? The question is, why can't I say Hashem's name in the bathroom? You think Hashem cares? The whole world's Hashem's. What does God care if I take a sefer into the bathroom? You think Hashem cares? It's a place. The whole place, from a Kodesh Baruch Hu's vantage point, it's all garbage. You know, it's all a bathroom. What's the difference? So the difference is not mitzido. It's not, the difference is not from God's vantage point. The difference is from mitzidenu, from our vantage point. We know that there's a different way of approaching different areas. When you go into a Beit Midrash, when you go into a shul, from our own vantage point, we're supposed to feel different. And therefore, it's like proposing to someone while in a bathroom. Like, it's the room. What's the difference to you? It's the room. What's the difference? From our own vantage point, we understand that that's a place of less kavod. That's a place of less dignity, of less honor. And therefore, we don't bring Hashem's name there. So you understand? Many times the question in the relationship is not what Hashem is able to do or not able to do, or the fact that Hashem is invisible, or the fact that we can't touch Hashem. The question is mitzidenu, from our own vantage point. The question becomes, from our own perspective, how do we create that relationship? Or a more basic question, how do we know if we're connected in the first place? How do we know if we're connected in the first place? How do we know if right now, are we connected to God or are we not? Do we have a litmus test to let us know whether or not we are connected to God right now? Right? We talk about creating a connection. How do I know if I have a connection right now to Hashem? So I was trying to remember. It's been years since I heard it, so I don't remember. And maybe someone could fill me in on the lyrics. It was a song from the 80s. So if anybody knows the 80s, the words that I do remember of it, I say a prayer with every heartbeat, hoping that he loves me. Now, I don't remember who said it and when. You could answer it for extra points, right? I don't remember who said it, when, and how, but you could say number one. That could be the first pshat. Are we connected to God? We don't know. We daven every day, and we hope that we are. Whitney Houston, extra. Shkoyach, beautiful, extra point. Thank you. Shkoyach. Let's see if you can tell me what Gemara is my next sword. Okay. Go ahead. No, beautiful. All right, next for the Daily Double. Go ahead. Okay. So there's truth there, and that is maybe we're all in a state of suffix and we don't know. Maybe we are connected to God, maybe we're not. And maybe that's the point of davening. Maybe the point of davening is we're always left in this limbo state and we don't know and we try our best and we're hoping that Hashem is happy with us and that we're good with Hashem and we're feeling it and we're in this, we're hoping all that's happening. But, I mean, you can make yourself crazy with that perspective. And I don't think that really is the authentic Jewish perspective, that we're supposed to live every day in a state of suffix, that we're supposed to live Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. You know, the Vilna Gaon says on Rosh Hashanah, you're not supposed to cry. Right? The Arizal says it's okay to cry. Vilna Gaon says you're not supposed to cry. It's Yom Kippur you cry. Rosh Hashanah you're not supposed to cry. Rosh Hashanah is a happy day. It's a celebratory day. So how could you celebrate? How could you be happy if you're living the way the song said to live? That every day you don't know. You know, if Hashem's there on the other line listening, you don't know. Every day is unsure. So that can't be. That can't be the pshat. That can't be the explanation as to whether we know, are we plugged in or not. The answer can't be that that's davening. Davening is helps us acknowledge that every day we just don't know. We don't know if we have any relationship. The other approach comes from the Din of a Rebbe, or also is found similar in the writings of the Maharal. That when we have when we do mitzvahs, we have two tracks. We have the action and we have the kavanah. The action requires you to do several specific activities. I have to do the mitzvah. I have to give the tzedakah in this way. I have to give tithe. I have to give a tenth of what I have and give it over by this certain amount of time. There's rules. I have to put the mezuzah up in my house, so this is when I can take down the mezuzah if I'm moving. There's rules. There's a maisa. There's actions. But says the Din of a Rebbe in the Derech Pikudecha, behind every action is also my intent, my machshava, my thought. And that's how we have a concept in Judaism, machshava kamaisa, that your thought can be like action. Let's say you tried to do the action, and for whatever reason you couldn't do it. You wanted to give tzedakah, you saw the poor person, you were running, and they're just gone. But you wanted to give it. So machshava mitzaref lemais, that Hashem counts an action as though you did it. A positive action is counted as though you did it. How does that work? At the end of the day, I didn't do it. What do you mean it counts as though? So from there says the Maharal, and from there says the Din of a Rebbe. What you see from that halacha, that machshava is counted as maisa, that thought is counted as action, what you see from there is that there is that relationship. That when we begin to think about mitzvah, when we begin to think about God, when we begin to think about doing good, that's when the relationship is sustained. That's when the connection point is made. You hear that word? Because otherwise, how in the world would this count? What does it count for? I didn't do anything. At the end of the day, if someone says, right, if my wife says, were you able to bring home the oranges, okay? I don't say, but I thought to bring it home. You either have it or you don't. Lamaisa, the oranges are either there or they're not there. The thought's beautiful, but you didn't get the oranges there. You can't make whatever it is you're going to make. But from God's vantage point, you see already the connection is made, even though the action hasn't been done, the connection is made already when your mind is geared towards the concept of doing good, of connecting to Hashem. That's already a little bit more empowering. That's a little bit stronger. Before it was terrible, though. If we left it with the Houston method, it left every day a suffix. It left every day an unknown. It's debilitating. The second idea is the Maharal. How do you know when you're connected in the Din of a Rebbe? You know when you're connected when you're thinking thoughts of doing good and you're attempting to do good and you're on a process of wanting to do good. That's when you know you're connected. How do you know you're connected? Because it counts as a mitzvah just by trying. It wouldn't count if you're not connected. That's how you know you're connected. The problem with that is what happens in the in-between times when you're just living your life, when you're not doing a mitzvah. Then you're not, so you're only, according to the Din of a Rebbe, you're only connected when you're doing the mitzvah. What if you're just living your daily, what if you're just going about your day? You're driving down McCann, right? Where is that? Where does that fall into the picture for the Din of a Rebbe? So we have a couple approaches, but I thought it still needs another step. It needs another approach here. Some want to say a third possible attempt is that you could feel it. You could feel the bliss, so to speak. You could feel there's a connection. It's a feeling. I feel right now I'm so connected to God. There was a psychologist whose name was Hicks. He said there's something called the emotional guidance system, the EGS, the emotional guidance system. He says what that means is there's a way to know if you're plugged in to whatever he's referring to. I don't know, but there's a way to know if you're plugged in, if you're connected. How do you know? If you feel in, like you're in a state of bliss, like you feel like everything is just, it's going. You feel right inside. So I was asking myself, is that a Jewish perspective or not? The feelings that things are going right, is that a Jewish perspective? Now, yes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us emotions. He gave us our emotional state for a reason. It's there to tell us something. So there might be some truth to it. But what it suggests is when you're having a hard day, when you're knocking things over, the morning just, you were frazzled that morning. You jumped out of bed. You knocked over the milk. Just you hit your head when you're trying to pick something. Everything's not going right. So what? You're not. That's when you're not connected? But if the day went smooth, so what it means is the less turbulence you have in your day, what it means is then the less, you know, interference that you have in your day, the more connected you are to God. I don't know if that's true. I mean, let me say clear. I think there is something. I'm not going to discount the fact that the tranquility and the serenity and that state of bliss that you might feel when your life is just right and everything is in order, I'm not discounting that from being a religious experience. But I think it's the opposite. That is a big question, though. But when you're not feeling that, when you're having a tough day, when you hit your foot on the door, when all those things happen and you're not feeling that bliss, the connection has been severed? So I think the third approach that I think people would take, and it's almost a secular spiritual approach, I think the third approach is also missing something a little bit. So again, the first approach is you never know. Let's just daven and we try our best. We hope we're connected. That we know is unsatisfying. Number two, we saw the Derech Pikudecha, the Din of a Rebbe, which, of course, that's true, but we're saying we need more. The Din of a Rebbe's approach is the idea that just by thinking thoughts, machshava, the machshava behind the mitzvah, attempting to do good, even if it never gets done, that's already our connection point. That's our nexus point between us and God, which then asks us, what about the rest of our day? What about the points in between the mitzvahs? The third approach, this approach, which I said is Hicks and others and New Age spiritualists, the idea of feeling bliss, the idea of feeling serene and tranquil is that our connection point to God, which then makes us ask ourselves, what if just I'm hot, I'm schwitzing, I'm not feeling well? There's no connection to God at that point. So now let us develop, I think, a good, sound Jewish approach to establishing a connection with God, to knowing how we are connected to God, and something, a message I think we could take away for us with Elul. Elul is the letters Aleph, Lamed, Vav, Lamed. And a lot has been said about what that stands for, the month of Elul. And one of the most famous allusions is the fact that Elul stands for the pasuk in Shir HaShirim, Ani l'dodi v'dodi li. I am to my beloved, and my beloved is to me. So there's something I've been wondering, and that is, it's a beautiful idea. Elul is, I am to my beloved, my beloved is to me. What happens on Rosh Hashanah? We no longer say Ani l'dodi v'dodi li. We switch over to Avinu Malkeinu, our father, our king. So what happened to the concept of Ani l'dodi v'dodi li? I am to my beloved, and my beloved is to me. What happened to that in Rosh Hashanah? Like, where did that go? That theme of love and the beloved, it's such a beautiful idea. How come it dropped off all of a sudden when you get to Rosh Hashanah? We move into Malkeinu, we move into Din, we move into all these, you know, these themes which seem a little bit harsher, when it seems like we should be starting harsh because we had a bad, rough year, and moving towards the beauty, and by the end of Yom Kippur, it should be all love. Instead, we're going to the king, and it's getting... What's going on here? So I saw an idea in this sefer written by Rav Itamar Schwartz. It's called Bilvavi Mishkan Evna, In My Heart, Build a Sanctuary. It's a beautiful sefer. And in there he writes that Avinu Malkeinu is a much higher level. Dodi might be the beloved. But Ani l'dodi v'dodi li indicates a period of time where you're just dating. Where the beloved is knocking on your door, and do you answer the call or do you not answer the call? You're going out on this night a week, Tuesday night, and you're going to date again 3 days later. That's Elul. But it's not the constant connection. Avinu Malkeinu, our father, our king, allows us to evolve from the state of Ani l'dodi v'dodi li to a much more mature and a constant state of Avinu Malkeinu. If you live in a country where there's a king, the king is the king every single day. The connection is there every single day. You are bound by the laws of that king every single day. Every minute that you wake, every minute that you're up, you are bound by those laws. Avinu, the father, someone is your father alive or not, good or bad. They're your father. They're your father either way. They're your father. Some people have great experiences with the concept of father. Some people have not so great experiences with the concept of father. But one thing you can't argue is that Avinu, father, is constant. It always is. It's a relationship, at least in concept, that is always, it is perpetual. And that's the evolution. You start with Ani l'dodi li. Yes, it's the lover and the beloved. But who says that's a relationship that's every single minute? Who says that's a relationship that's going on all of the time? So we move gradually to plugging ourselves in, to connecting ourselves to God, to where on Rosh Hashanah it could be one of Avinu Malkeinu. Does it sound harsh? Does it sound with royalty and Malkeinu? Maybe. And we could explore whether Malkeinu is really a harsh concept or not. There are many reasons to say why it's not. But the main point is, Avinu and Malkeinu are both relationships that are constant, 24-hour relationships that exist. They are. They just are there. They're there in concept. So it's an evolution in terms of our relationship. So what is this time frame? This time frame of Elul is a period where we're working to establish a connection and to have it sustain to the level of Malkeinu, where it's not just there when you're doing the mitzvah, where it's not just there when you're thinking the positive thought, where it's not just there when you're davening, or it's not just there when you feel bliss. Someone's your king whether you feel bliss or not. Someone potentially is your father whether or not you're feeling that relationship right now. They are. They just are already then. So what gets us to that point? What gets us to the point of Ani l'dodi li, the beginning to court, the courtship and the relationship, to be able to get to Avinu Malkeinu? So the Netziv and the Lubavitcher Rebbe both have the same idea. The way to build that connection is to answer the call of your life. To answer the specific call of your life. And without answering that call, life begins to dry up inside. And that's when we become stale, and that's when we feel cold, and that's when we feel disconnected. It's not about whether we're feeling serene right now or not. Says the Lubavitcher Rebbe and the Netziv, To know whether the connection is intact or not is to know whether you're living your calling in your life, whether you're living why you are here, whether you're living your purpose in your life, your life's mission. Just as a technical example that shows the truth of this concept, the whole notion of the laws of Nida, right? A very difficult concept for people to understand, why it creates in halacha something we call tumah. Tumah, we translate, is impurity. And it's a terrible translation. We just have no better word in English. The problem is, often with Judaism, when you try to explain, sometimes things get lost in translation, which much of life, but sometimes things get lost in translation, and particularly Judaism, which is so focused on understanding the root of the Hebrew word. It's not about impurity. It's not that. Atom is the root of the word tumah. It means a certain vacuum has been created. What's the vacuum? So before Nida begins, the potential for life was hypothetically there. The potential for life was hypothetically there. When that did not bear out, when that did not take hold, when that did not actualize, that's when you have what's called the laws of Nida. So what is tumah? It's so much different than impurity. It's the vacuum that's been created by not ensuring that life specifically is going to happen this month. That life is specifically going to take place right now. It's not a punishment. It's not a dirtiness. It's the reality of a vacuum that's no longer there. Everybody points out, oh, Judaism must be sexist because after a boy is born, you only wait a certain amount of days where of impurity, of tumah, but for a girl, it's doubled. Why is it doubled for a girl? So Rav Hirsch, Rav Shams, Rav Paul Hirsch points out, he says, first of all, anyone who says that doesn't know how to read the Chumash because you have to continue reading. Two psukim later it says, the woman goes through a stage where she's entirely pure and cannot become impure. That stage is doubled after giving birth to a girl. So it's obviously we're talking about things that are beyond our understanding. The tumah might be more intense, but the period of tahara, of perfect purity, is also doubled at the birth of a girl. So what is the concept? Says Rav Hirsch as follows, because out of the stomach of the woman came a girl. So inside the woman was the potential for life. Life is no longer in her. That's great. We want the life to come out. But it's created a vacuum. The vacuum creates what we call tumah. It's vacuum, not impurity. It creates a vacuum. And what left her? A woman, a girl. Girl is also double potential for life. And therefore, it impacts and doubles the state of tumah because it's a vacuum on top of a vacuum. That vacuous feeling that's been created, Rav Sajagon, by the way, says, sometimes women after giving birth go through what's called a mara shechora, a dark period, a depression that sometimes onsets after giving birth. So he connects the two. He connects the vacuum of tumah as being the cause of sometimes postpartum. Now, I don't know if that bears up medically or not, but I put that out there. So why did I give you this whole need the mashal all that? Because it illustrates the following idea. That when the potential is not actualized, it creates at that moment what's called the tumah. It creates what's called at that moment a feeling of the drying up, a feeling where the potential is not being actualized and you lose that state of bliss, the Jewish state of bliss as we know it. So there's a philosopher whose name is Schopenhauer. And let me take a step back. What I've said so far is as follows. How do I know if I'm connected to God or not? We went through three approaches that I said did not satisfy us entirely. The fourth approach, which is from the Nitziv and the Lubavitch Rebbe, and I think is hinted to in the concept of Nida and childbirth and all of that, is the concept of answering our call, of living the potential that we can do at that moment, living the present potential, what we're supposed to be doing at that time, what we're supposed to be doing in our lives. Here's the problem, though. How do we know what we're supposed to be doing? How in the world are we supposed to know what our call is? Right? What is our mission in life? What is our potential that we're supposed to be? Everyone says, answer your call, right? Live your mission. How do you know what your mission? Is there a light that comes down and says, aha, this is what you're supposed to be doing in your life? Who says this is what I'm supposed to be? I'm sure people have gone on a path of things they haven't supposed to be. Is that their mission? How do you know? So there's a philosopher, his name is Schopenhauer, and he has a little essay he wrote called On an Apparent Intention in the Fate of the Individual. And he says a fabulous thing. He says, all of our lives seem to have a plot. You don't realize while you're living it, but when you stop and you look back at your life over the last few years, you'll see there was really a movie. There was climax, there was conflict, there was the denouement, there was the up, there was the down, there was the struggle. And you could really make a movie, even out of the most boring life, Schopenhauer says, you can go back and you can make an amazing book out of it. There are ups, there are downs, there are struggles, there's conflict, there's challenges, and there are themes, just like a movie, that keep recurring in your life. Schopenhauer says, look back at your life and you could see your life's theme. You could do it if anybody keeps a diary. You could look at a diary and see what are the old things that keep creeping up every so often, the same struggles over and over and over again. Says the Sfas Emes, the Ger Rebbe. We learn from the fathers and the mothers, the Avot and the Imaot, something. We learn that if you want to know what your mission is in life, look back at your life story and see where are the themes, the inflection points that keep coming up in your life. Look back at your story and you'll know. Avram is supposed to figure out what he needs to do, right? Avram's got no clue. God says, Lech Lecha, go. Lech Lecha. How? What is Avram supposed to do? He doesn't know where he's going. He doesn't know where he's supposed to be going to. And right there was the answer. Beautiful idea from the Lubavitch Rebbe. The words Lech Lecha mean Lech Lecha. Go to you. Go back to you. Meaning, what's Avram's purpose? He's supposed to go back to his own script, his own story, to figure out what his mission is. And he looks back and he sees, wait a second. I have struggles with my father, with his past. I have struggles with this idolatry. I have struggles in my past of trying to separate myself and trying to remove myself. Wait a second. That's my life's mission. And he becomes Avraham HaIvri. What does Ivri mean? The one who stands on one side of the ocean against the other. He was someone who had to create a religion that was separate from everything else, separate from anything else. That's Avraham HaIvri. He looked back at himself, he looked back at his life story, and he saw, wait a second, that's it, that's my struggle, I figured it out. And going forward, it's creating a separate identity for the Jewish people. We all of us, have stories. We all have things that keep coming up in our lives, things we keep messing up in, and things we keep succeeding in. And that's our story. That's our theme. It's not just the things you keep failing in that you have to triumph over, but it's also the things that you've been great at, that you've done well. The Satmar Rav says as follows. The Satmar Rav says, look back at the mitzvahs that you've always been running to, the ones that you shined at, the ones that everybody knows. You're the go-to person for chesed. You're the go-to person for achnasad orchim. Or you're the person that hasn't been the go-to, but it's been your passion. You've always wanted to be the go-to. Says the Satmar Rav, you know that's your calling. You know that's your mission. So you could look at the failures and you could look at the successes and say, those are both part of my life's calling. And when your life is lived, living in that direction, that's how you plug in. That's how you connect. Elul is the month where you try to uncover and you sit and you contemplate to figure out what is your potential, what is your connection points, where are the areas in my life that I am meant to excel in, where are the areas in my life that I am supposed to be in. And I want to make an important note to that. A very important note. Let's say we try this. Let's say we go home after this and we figure out, what in the world am I here for? The amazing thing about Judaism is it has the humility for us to realize that it doesn't take a minute for us to figure out why we're here. We'll try different things. And it's okay to fail. It's okay to create a fiasco of what we just attempted to do. Let's say we walk out of here and we think, okay, I gave it a few minute thought. I remember what keeps coming up in my life is that I've been hurtful to somebody around me. Over and over, I keep hurting them. You know what? That's my calling. That's what I need to work on, right? And you try and you try and you try, but you're still not feeling it. It's okay to fail. It's okay for it not to succeed. I'll show one of the most amazing lines that comes up in the Gemara. I saw it the other week when I was doing the Daf Yomi. It's a great Gemara. What happened was the head of the real Rosh Yeshiva in town was Rabbi Gamliel. Okay, Rabbi Gamliel was the big shot, right? And he disagreed with Rabbi Yoshua. He disagreed with Rabbi Yoshua. Okay, Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yoshua. And what happened was, because Rabbi Yoshua had a position that disagreed with the head of the Rosh Yeshiva, the Nasi, the head, Rabbi Gamliel wanted to make an example out of Rabbi Yeshua to show everyone that he was wrong, and I'm going to point it out publicly. Because Rabbi Gamliel felt he wasn't just defending himself, he's defending the position of the head Rosh Yeshiva. And he goes back and forth, and it creates a little bit of a rebellion. And they throw Rabbi Gamliel out from being the head Rosh Yeshiva. They say, you know what? The way he treated Rabbi Yeshua, It's not going to stay. Rabbi Gamliel can no longer be the head Rosh Yeshiva. It was a big conflict that comes up in Gemara Brachos. You see it also in the Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah. And they say, Ma Nokim Le, who should we appoint instead of Rabbi Gamliel as the head? Nokme le Rabbi Yeshua, should we appoint the other guy, Rabbi Yeshua, who argued with him? That won't look good, because that'll undermine what this is about. That'll make it like it was political, right? It was a fight between them. We're getting him out, putting in the new guy. No, we're trying to set a message here. How you have a good debate, how you have a good argument. Instead, Ela nukme le Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Let's appoint Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Why? To hu chacham hu ashir hu ashiri le Ezra. He's wise, he's wealthy, and he's the 10th generation from Ezra. Let's put him. The problem is, Ezra's nervous. He's so young. Right, this is in the Haggadah on Pesach. Harei ani kaben, right, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was like a young kid, and he's wondering, how in the world will I be the Rosh Yeshiva? I'm just too young. I don't even have a white hair in my beard. Right, what am I going to do? He goes home and does what every good rabbi should do. What does he do? Azil ve'imloch b'debisu. He goes home and consults with his wife. Amrlai, she says to him, Dilma ba'abrinlach. Well, the one thing I would caution you, Elazar, is that they might remove you. You're in the middle of a political battle here. You're going to get appointed as the Rosh Yeshiva. Don't worry about the age thing. God will take care of that. But you're going to be appointed, and all of a sudden, they might appease Rabbi Gamliel, and they say, you know what, we made a mistake, let's go back. And they'll remove you. They'll make a fool of you. They'll remove you the next day. And here's his line. Amrle says to his wife, Lishtamesh inish yomachada b'chasa demokra. Let a person use a precious black glass cup one day, ulamachar litvar, and the next day, let it break. Amrle, she said to him, Leis lachiyurta. She goes, then she talks about the white hairs and the beard, but she says, go for it. What a line. Let me drink in the glass cup one day, even if it breaks tomorrow. And I think that's a proper Jewish perspective. You know, a lot of this New Age approach to self-help and, you know, living your calling, living your purpose, skips over this important step that you might mess up and go down a road that wasn't meant to be your path in life, that wasn't meant to be your purpose, that wasn't meant to be what you're specifically here to do. And I think what you learn from Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is that it's okay if it's the wrong one. It's okay if you find out a day later, you know what? That wasn't my calling. That wasn't my purpose. That's not what... Or you live your calling and you fail and you mess up in it. You create a fiasco of your life. That is okay. I'll give you another great source, Rav Huttner. Rav Huttner was the great Rosh Yeshiva of Chaim Berlin. What a beautiful letter he writes. He says, Dalacha Chabibi, my good friend, I want you to know, Hinenu mitaplim b'sikron shemadim saprim anu al darchei ha-shleimut shalahem. You know, we keep talking about these great rabbis. And you know what my problem with all this discussion is? We always talk about the end of their lives, when they were already great. But nobody talks about all the falls that they had to take to become great. Nobody speaks about the failures in between before they got to where they are. Hakol Meshokim is Palim Warimim Al Neisa Taras Alash Vacha. Everyone talks about the tongue of the Chafetz Chaim, how he never spoke Lashon Hara. Aval mi yodea min kol hamilchamot. But who knows about all the battles, the wars, the struggles, hamichsholim, the stumbles, the fallings that the Chafetz Chaim had to take in his life to become the Chafetz Chaim? Whoever hears about those? The Chafetz Chaim's son wrote a biography. And in the biography, he says, everyone thinks my father was this sweet, quiet, idle man, just always sitting like a little old man quietly. He goes, my father was red-haired. You know what that means? He had a temper. But the greatness of my father is that when he was angry, he sat in the corner and he held it in. He took that anger and he found a way to diffuse it. The greatness of the Chafetz Chaim was never that he never got angry. The greatness of the Chafetz Chaim was that he got angry and he found a way to subdue the anger. Says Rav Huttner, you need to know about the struggles in Judaism because it's okay to fail on the way to our mission. Avodalacha chavivi, sheshorish nishmaseichu lo hashava shel yetzer tov, ela dafka shel milchamtei tzav. This is the beautiful line. The root of your neshama is not the tranquility. It's against the whole New Age spiritual philosophy. The root of who you are is not the tranquility and the bliss in your life that you have with your Yetzer Tov. It's dafka the milchemto shel Yetzer Tov. It's living with the struggle. It's living with the battle. It's living trying to find who the best you is. It's living trying to find your purpose, what you're supposed to be doing, not having an easy day and trying to recover from it and making the best of your day-to-day moments. That's what it means to live as a Jew, says Rav Huttner. Someone came, and I close with this, someone came crying to Rav Huttner, saying to him, Rebbe, I have to leave the world of yeshiva to enter the world of working. I'm so scared. I've been all these years in yeshiva. I'm so scared. Says Rav Huttner to him, your biggest mistake is that you think it's two worlds. We're in one world, and it's God's world. And every moment is an opportunity to connect and live our purpose. Whether you're in the middle of a mitzvah, whether you're thinking of a mitzvah, whether you're doing the day-to-day jobs of life and the day-to-day duties of life, it's all part of the process of connecting to God. And sometimes on that journey of that connection, there are failures, there are mess-ups, there are things that spill, there are accidents that happen. But don't think for a moment that means that there's a disconnect. It means that we need to pick ourselves up. The Pasuk says, Sheva yipal tzaddik v'kam. The tzaddik falls seven times and he gets back up. And says Rav Huttner in that same letter, the falling is part of the rise. It's part of the rise. You can't get up properly unless you know how to fall. And that's what life is about. That's what Elul is. It's figuring out where our sweet spot is, where that comfort zone is, where the area is for our calling in our lives. And it doesn't happen overnight that we figure it out. And it doesn't mean right away we're going to know what to do. But eventually, with a good Rosh Hashanah, a good Yom Kippur, we figure out how to establish the relationship going forward for the year to come. Shkoach. Thank you.